Welcome everyone to another episode of our One Health Research podcast. My name is Leah and it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Heinz Feldmann today. He's a renowned virologist at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in the United States. He's also a specialist in highly infectious viruses, like the Ebola virus, against which he's also developed a vaccine. Welcome, Heinz, and thank you for taking the time.
Hi, welcome.
So to start with, maybe tell us something about your current research project. What are you and your research group working on at the moment?
Well, our laboratory, the Laboratory of Virology, which belongs to the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, as you mentioned, works on multiple viral pathogens, but we are operating high containment laboratories up to the level 4. So we're focusing more on those viral pathogens that need this higher level of biocontainment. We are 6 groups here in the laboratory. So a laboratory is similar to a department at the university. So we're 6 principal investigators, and all of us work on different aspects of viral, high consequence viral infections. My group is currently working on 3 different projects. One is related to arena viruses with focus on Lassa fever, Lassa virus causing Lassa fever. And another project that we're working on is related to Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever virus. And we're still working to a certain degree on SARS-CoV-2 causing COVID at this point.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very interesting. And like I said at the beginning, you're a specialist for the Ebola virus. You served as a consultant for the World Health Organization during the Ebola epidemic. So I assume you spent quite some time in the affected regions in Central and West Africa. What was your experience there as a virologist?
Yeah, the Ebola work, I guess, is occupying or associated with most of my career. I started working on Marburg virus, a close cousin of Ebola, during my time in Marburg, Germany already, and then focused more on Ebola during my time at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, and then in Canada with the Public Health Agency of Canada, and in the early times here at the NIAID. Our focus on Ebola was vaccine development and diagnostic and outbreak response. And most of my outbreak response activities fall into my time in Canada from 1999 to 2008. During that time, we have been deployed multiple times to Ebola and Marburg outbreaks in Africa. As consultant of the World Health Organization for laboratory diagnostics. So our job was restricted to on-site laboratory diagnostics. We developed a mobile field laboratory that we could bring into remote areas, run off car batteries or other power sources. Very remote, very simple, very robust to do molecular detection of Ebola and Marburg. So very focused and specific diagnostics. So the question to answer was, during an Ebola outbreak, is this an Ebola patient or not? Which is, of course, very important for case-based management. You don't want to intermingle Ebola positive with Ebola negative patients, because there is the potential of human-to-human transmission And so for the doctors in the wards, it was very, very important to get a quick turnaround of someone who was or who came in as a putative Ebola or probable Ebola case. Case definition, fit with an Ebola infection, laboratory diagnostics would confirm that case. If the case was positive, the person would go into the ward and would be treated there. If the person was negative, but still symptomatic, the person would be held at a different ward until a second confirmatory test excluded Ebola. Then was moved on to whatever was needed in terms of medical care. So that was basically the job that we had, but we also supported field investigations into the index case as well as potential animal reservoirs, again, mainly with laboratory services assisted the outbreak investigations by multiple ways, providing diagnostic, molecular diagnostics.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say was like the main challenge in containing the Ebola virus?
The main issue with Ebola is to mobilize the community to make them aware of this potential disease and how it can be contracted, but also to not panic, create a panic in the community. Ebola is not an airborne transmitted disease. It can be airborne transmitted in certain circumstances, but in natural occurrence, it is not. And to just educate, isolate and treat patients are the key elements of outbreak response. In the early years, since the big West African outbreak, we now, of course, have vaccines, and we do have certain treatment options. So we've really gained a lot. Now we can also provide treatment and we can do prophylactic vaccination in that area. So outbreak response has become very sophisticated for Ebola. And that was an interesting development from going there in the early years where you literally had to diagnose people and just wait and see if they would survive or not. From nowadays, giving these people hope and a chance to survive, even if they develop severe Ebola disease.
Okay, so like you mentioned, one of the most important treatment options prophylactically is the vaccine. Now, you have developed one of the vaccines that is since a few years available to people. How long did it take to develop that vaccine? And maybe you can describe the process a little bit.
Well, the project started all the way back in Marburg, Germany, where we started to use that reverse genetic system for creating vesicular stomatitis virus vectors. Vesicular stomatitis virus, abbreviated VSV, is an animal pathogen that can infect humans, but only very rarely does it, and only very rarely causes mild clinical symptoms in humans. A lot of humans have never been in contact with that animal pathogen, livestock pathogen. So we chose that vector at the time to express the surface proteins of simple viruses such as Ebola, to get away from the high containment lab and study the function of these surface proteins. So what we were doing, or what this system allowed, you could through our DNA introduction into cells, you could make a recombinant virus that looked like VSV, but on the surface of the virus had the Ebola glycoprotein. So since that surface protein is dictating what cells can be infected, and the first entry into the cell is directed and mediated by this glycoprotein, so you can study that function of that protein in cell culture as well as in animals. So that was the idea. And that started back in Marburg. When I then moved to Canada and working with the Public Health Agency of Canada, our mandate was research in public health, and public health including vaccine development as well as diagnostics as well as treatment. So we started a vaccine project using these vectors wanted to see if these vectors could deliver a recombinant virus that then could function as a vaccine, mediate immune responses that might be protective against the real Ebola virus infection. And so first studies were done in mice. We used these vectors in Winnipeg, and these mice were completely protected against a lethal infection of Ebola. We moved that then forward into guinea pigs and then finally non-human primates, which still are the gold standard animal models. So we did all the preclinical work. And then this was in the early 2000s. I think the first paper came out in 2004 and 2005. And then nothing happened. Ebola wasn't very interesting to people, to a broader community. It would occasionally cause small epidemics in very remote African areas, which hardly ever even got media attention. So no one was really interested in developing a vaccine, particularly not pharma industry, because there was no market for this vaccine, and the people that would need it belonged to the most poor people on this planet, meaning they couldn't afford the vaccine anyway. So that was the status until the big West African outbreak hit at the end of 2013. And that changed the whole field and how to look at this. Before, these type of vaccines were of interest to governments, particularly also in response to a bioweapon attack. Ebola is high on the list for as a bioweapon pathogen. So money for the development of this vaccine came from government sources, often even defense-related resources. But that, again, I mentioned it already, changed in 2013. Actually, the vaccine got into play at the end of that outbreak, which was end of 2015, early 2016. And Canada moved this along with WHO, did GMP production of the vaccine, and then it was finally through a smaller biotech company, ended up with Merck produce this vaccine and make it available, which is now a regular part of outbreak response. So when outbreak response is occurring for Ebola, this vaccine is used in form of a ring vaccination, which means you identify a case and then you vaccinate people that may have been in contact with that case immediately. And the vaccine has shown that it takes about a week to 10 days to give protection or to give solid protection against an Ebola infection. So it's a very important tool in outbreak response, but doesn't really help if someone is infected already. So for an affected person, you need a therapeutic approach where we have now monoclonal antibody therapy as well as a small drug, nucleoside analog called remdesivir, that can be used for Ebola, but the most potent therapy would be the monoclonal antibody cocktails.
Mm-hmm. And Now, in fact, we are still in, or at least during the last 2 years, have been facing a pandemic caused by a virus that most probably originated from an animal. In your opinion, what's the most important thing that we need to focus on to prevent future epidemics or even pandemics?
That's hard to say. What's the most important thing? It's not still not very easy to predict what the next epidemic or even pandemic will be. There are certain virus families or virus, they are now grouped in bigger orders that are prone or have been prone to epidemics or pandemic development. Influenza, for example, is a long-lasting pathogen is with us for a long time, and we know there have been pandemics in the past century. And the coronaviruses are another good example. Ebola, at this point, in my view, less likely to be a cause of a pandemic, but can cause certainly larger epidemics, as the one in West Africa. But of course, this is of concern as well. If it would gain more easier ways of human-to-human transmission. One of the big problems, or one of the unknowns with these viruses, they come from zoonotic origin. Then they enter, that could be, a mammal, a different mammal. Ebola is thought to be harbored in bats, in certain bat species. Even so, that has not been proven. It has been shown for Marburg, but it has not been shown for Ebola, or not been proven for Ebola. But the actually introduction is this, can be as simple as a single event, a human getting contact with that virus through interaction with an infected bat. But then when we see outbreaks, it's the human-to-human transmission that makes an outbreak, so you don't need the bat any longer. That's the situation with Ebola. And Ebola, you need contact or close contact in order to transmit. If you look at a situation like Corona, which we have right now with COVID, it starts in a similar fashion. Coronaviruses are also thought to come from bats, at least many of them. So there must have been an introduction at one time into the human species. But then again, it's what we see worldwide with COVID right now. It's a human-to-human transmission, so the bats are not involved. There may be other transmission, or what we call spillover events, from the original reservoir to the human. But what we see in the pandemic or in the big epidemics is the human-to-human transmission. Coronavirus, in this case SARS-CoV-2, is much more transmissible. It can be transmitted through droplets and aerosols to humans, and that makes it a much, much more potent human-to-human transmissible disease. You can imagine, if I have an Ebola patient, lock him up. In the best case scenario, you immediately stop the human-to-human transmission. And this simple concept has been used in the former days of Ebola outbreaks in rural Africa. There's even communities, they did this by themselves. They got to know about these disease symptoms. They may not have called it Ebola, but they knew that these patients had to be isolated. They would be put into a hut at the edge of the village, and they would provide them with food. And these patients either made it or not. If they didn't make it, they just burned the whole hut and the cadaver, so to speak. And they stopped further infections. So simple isolation will work very well for something like Ebola, but it may work less well for something like SARS-CoV-2/COVID, because there is another transmission mode that you have to consider. So to stop SARS-CoV-2 is much more difficult than to stop Ebola. even so, Ebola is much, much more virulent and still untreated or not prevented has a case fatality rate up to 90%. So there's differences, and you need to look at those fine differences between these viruses and what the dynamics are in terms of your response and how to apply public health measures.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes very much sense. Now we're already at the end of our podcast. Thanks again for taking the time today, Heinz.
Well, my pleasure. It was nice to talk to you and give a little bit of an introduction into epidemics and pandemics caused by high consequence pathogens.